This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it, the phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? Happy New Year. You're thinking about taking your talents to Hollywood and trying to make it in showbiz? Good luck, man. Hey, listen, no offense intended, but what exactly are you talented at? What do you mean you're really, really, really good at listening to shitty amateur rock and roll podcasts? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on?
I said,
L.A. Money Train by Rollins Band? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be L.A. Money Train by noisy 90s alt rockers Rollins Band. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line, Rico Gnu,
no,
7-time Silver Sow Award winner. Rico, how the hell are you?
Dude, I'm good. Yeah. I'm pumped, man. I can't wait to get into this, dude. We got a lot to talk about. Yeah.
Wow. I don't know what to make of this fake enthusiasm here.
That's my best Reverend Henry imitation that we'll get to later on.
Oh, shit. All right. Can we have some news, please?
Yeah. All right. First on the docket, I have never heard of this before. It makes total sense. So, Jeff, you know who Jeff Watson is?
I don't.
Okay. So, he is the former guitarist for Night Ranger, and he is recalling when they toured with Kiss, how when he would go backstage, it always smelled like burnt toast.
My toast particles are dissipating.
Backstage for Kiss concerts. Have you ever, I'm hoping you didn't read the article so that I can enlighten you. Have you ever heard of this before? Because I have not.
I have not. I did not read the article. I looked at the headlines and the show notes and I thought about reading it, but I thought, no, I want to learn this one in real time.
Do you have any guess as to what that could be from? I know because I read the article, but I want to see if you have any idea whatsoever.
that backstage at Kiss concerts, it smells like burnt toast.
Burnt toast.
Oh gosh. And do we have any idea? Can you give me a clue as to what era of Kiss?
Like around early 80s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's no drugs going on in Kiss, so they're not cooking up any heroin in a spoon or anything. Ace is gone, so he's no longer doing the he's no longer putting smoke bombs in his guitar at that point, so it can't be that.
And Peter Criss is gone, so it's not his brain from all the coke he was doing.
Yep. Gene breathes fire on stage, so it's not him testing out his fire breathing skills backstage. I don't know, man. Why does the Kiss backstage area smell like burnt toast?
My toast particles are dissipating.
So apparently back then, the guy who, I have to look at the article, the guy who was kind of helping them out, one of the tour managers or whatever, when Gene initially proposed, I guess when they talked about doing the fire breathing, like they didn't think it was such a super idea. And the first time that they did it, like he caught his hair on fire and Gene's like, and everybody thought it was fucking great. But the burnt toast, Scott, was whatever he was using to spit out of his mouth to get caught on fire, apparently was super toxic and poisonous. And so when you have this shit in your mouth, you swallow some of it sometimes. And apparently eating a shitload of burnt toast before you can get to a doctor, it helps you from getting really sick.
Oh my God.
So they always had like a bunch of burnt toast in backstage for when Gene would breathe fire, because this whatever this toxic shit that he was using that he would swallow accidentally, and that he would like house a bunch of burnt toast to keep him from getting really sick.
So I was right, it was related to Gene and his fire breathing. I just thought he was maybe rehearsing it backstage, but it's
no.
Wow,
I had never heard of that before. I mean, I don't know what kind of fucking kooky old wives' tale. I mean, apparently it worked because the dude is still alive. But I had never heard of, like, remember that, Scott. If your kids ever swallow drain cleaner on accident, dude, just make a bunch of burnt toast.
Oh my gosh. Well, we burn.
I mean, you are king of dad breakfast. So burning toast for you is like sacrilege, I'm sure. But in order to ensure the health of your kids, I'm sure you could probably burn a few slices, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing that burns my ass about the toaster situation. Our toaster has this little like slider doodad on it where you can kind of adjust how well done your toast is. And if you're like toasting a bagel, you can kind of toggle it back a little bit. If you want your toast a little crispier, you can kind of dial it forward a little bit. Listen, I'ma just leave it set to four guy, okay? Just set it and forget it. Four. Cook everything on four. All toast, English muffin, toast, rye bread, wheat bread, white bread, fucking Wonder Bread, bagel, everything bagel, cinnamon bagel. I don't care. Just set it on four and forget it. But oh no, the people in my house, Rico, are always dicking with that dial. So when I put toast in there, God only knows what I'm gonna get, because I forget to check the dial. So sometimes the toast pops and it's like still bread, and other times it pops and it's burnt and it's like something I'd feed Gene Simmons. So I got toast issues, man. Leave the dial alone. Set it and forget it.
When you're making bagels, do you toast just the inside, or you toast the outside and the inside?
How do you toast just the inside?
Well, with the bagel setting, like do you have a bagel button on your, so you hit the bagel button and it turns off the outside burners so that only the inside ones are on, so it only cooks the inside of the bagel.
I don't have
one of those.
I must have a toaster from like 1973. I don't have a bagel button.
Holy hell. So when you're making bagels, you toast the outside and the inside?
I mean, I guess I don't really. My daughter makes bagels all the time. I never do, but
God,
yeah, I guess.
No, you gotta get it, dude. Get into 2024. Get yourself a new toaster. Because you got to just cook the inside, because what happens is if you toast the outside, it gets super fucking hard and it's no fun to eat. So you guys have no idea. You got to toast just the inside and then the outside stays soft, you see. And then the inside is toasty, the outside is soft. It's fucking great.
I'll add that to the list of appliances in my home that need replaced. Yeah. Let's run it down real quick.
Fuck the broken washer. Just get a new toaster.
Let's run it down. Washing machine. Yeah. Toaster, okay. The microwave my wife and I got as a gift when we got married over 20 years ago. Not kidding. That's how old it is. The microwave needs replaced. Dishwasher needs replaced. We did buy a new oven finally. The refrigerator is relatively new. So that's washer, toaster, dishwasher, microwave. Three. Oh, our can opener is broken, so we need a new can opener.
Well, you don't do the hand thing?
We have them, but my wife likes the electric one. And the electric one's, it's been dropped too many times. It's broken.
I got so. Drop? How do you drop a can opener? It's supposed to sit on the counter.
Fucking, I don't know, man, because it doesn't always sit on the counter. It gets put away in the cupboard, and then it gets pulled out, and then it gets fumbled in the transfer from being removed from the cupboard to the counter. I don't know, man. I got to buy a new one, dude.
You gotta get your wife some of those wide receiver gloves that she puts on before she gets the can opener out. That way she ensures a good secure grip.
My daughter was doing her homework and she comes in and she's upset because she sat down to do her homework and she dropped her Chromebook and the screen had peeled off and the entire back of it snapped off. And I was like, son of a bitch.
Damn, bad job.
I can't keep replacing this crap, dude. It's hard enough to buy it once. But then buying it multiple times, I can't do it. I got to monetize this podcast.
No shit. Well, we'll get to that later on. But dude, yeah, I feel your pain, dude. Like, all right, enough about that. It's depressing though. Anyway, only cook your bagels on one side. Do you have a toaster oven?
We do, but it also was a gift when my wife and I got married, and it sits on a shelf in the basement. We only bring it upstairs once in a great while.
Jesus, do you still have a fucking rotary telephone too? Or
the
what?
Problem, dude, I don't have any counter space. So you literally have, there's, if I put it on the counter, I got nowhere to like do anything. So it's stuff, shit has to be put away. You've seen my house. I've got a tiny
kitchen. I've been there.
There's no counter space.
You have like a 1.5 ass kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay, though. It's big enough, dude. You're good. All right. Anyway, Gene Simmons fucking eats burnt toast in order to prevent himself from dying from poison. So, I mean, who knew? I didn't know that. Excuse me. Drinking ginger ale. Dude, did you know? I'm sure you did. Dude, Rage Isn't Touring anymore. Did you know that?
Yeah, I saw that, man. Their reunion tour was marred by Zach De La Rocha. What did he have? An Achilles injury? Did some gigs from a seated position on stage.
Yep.
You knew something was wrong.
I guess Comerford had some prostate cancer issues too. So I don't know. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, you knew something was wrong when they when only Tom Morello showed up for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. So I think that was the first tip. Yeah, I know that the bass player, I think, was battling cancer, but I mean, you had a sense, dude, that something was wrong. And that was a big ticket. So I think the tour was doing well. I think a lot of people wanted to go and see them. I think it was a pretty good draw. So for them to not simply cash in, which is the inclination of most rock and roll bands, if there's demand, to simply, you know, take that money, they didn't do that. And so for them to kind of walk away from it, you knew something was wrong.
Yeah, they hopped off the money train, Scott. But yeah, I thought it was kind of atypical because, okay, so Zach De La Rocha said that he only has like 8% of his Achilles that is still attached, which is pretty bad, actually. So in light of the cancer situation and Zach De La Rocha's Achilles tendon, like they didn't say, which is, here's the kind of the unusual part, and to your point, like they didn't say, well, we're going to assess things and, you know, pull an NFL head coaching, you know, coach speak kind of thing. Well, we're going to assess the situation and, you know, see where we are on the other end. They didn't say any of that. They were like, fuck it, we're done. That's it. Maybe they just got tired of all the bullshit. They felt like maybe they were going through the motions, maybe, and maybe they just needed this to kind of push them to where they were headed anyways, right? So here's my question. They said they weren't touring anymore. Do you think they're still going to do some studio stuff?
No, I don't think. I mean, they haven't put out a studio album since the Battle of Los Angeles like 100 years ago. So I don't think... That was their last, you know, they did the covers record, but that was their last original piece of studio work. So, no, I mean, if they haven't done anything in 30 years, I don't know why they would start now. So I think as a recording and touring entity, they're probably done. I will say this. I mean, the reunion shows that they did, when you watch the clips on YouTube, they were hopping, man. They sounded great.
Oh, hell yeah, they were.
So, I mean, I don't think there was any lack of, like, you know, interest or devotion or going through the motions. I mean, I think those shows looked to be straight fire from what I could see on YouTube. I mean, they looked and sounded incredible and they were just a force live. And so if they go out like that, to me, it's like, awesome. I didn't have to watch you at the Power Trip Festival as like 80-year-old men, you know, who can barely croak out a note. I got my last images of Rage, albeit with an Achilles injury. I saw them on stage at the peak of their powers. I didn't see it in person, but I mean, on YouTube, they looked to me to be at the peak of their powers still. And that's frankly how I want to remember them, because I think they were an absolute like force live. So I'm, you know, if they want to call it, listen, man, you are never going to get me to be upset about a band calling it quits. I have no problem with it ever. I don't need my favorite bands to put out records until they're 90. I don't need their discographies to be 18 records deep. If you put out a handful of albums that I enjoy, I'm happy. Bands are not fucking lemons that we just squeeze and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze until all that's left is the rind and like some tattered pulp on the inside. They're creative entities. And if they no longer have anything to say creatively, I don't want them putting shit out just to generate product. I'm not interested in that. I want legitimate, inspired art. And if you're just putting stuff out to have a reason to tour, or to, you know, just keep your name out there, or because the record label is demanding new product, that's not what they're not making widgets to me. They're bands and they're musicians. I want them to make music when they're inspired. So I will never be mad at a band for quitting. In fact, I wish more would. So I'm happy that they're retiring. That's good. Step aside, somewhere in the world, there's some angry young people who will hopefully pick up a guitar and take their place.
Amen, brother. Breach it. Holy crap. Is there a man? I genuinely don't know the answer to this. I'm hoping that maybe you do. Is there two questions? Part one is there a band out there that could take these guys' place? And part two of that is, do we need a band to take their place?
God, I don't know. I mean, I think that, gosh, I don't think, I mean, nothing comes to mind for me, but I'm not a person with like my ear to the ground who's totally hip to everything that's going on in the world musically. I will be the first person to admit that my cultural sensibilities kind of withered on the vine a long time ago. So I am in no position. There could be, if I had somebody on this podcast who was 30 years younger than me, they might say, oh yeah, there's this band from Georgia, they're great, you should check them out, you know, but I'm not that guy. So there could be, I hope so, you know, it doesn't have to be a Rage clone, but you know, I hope so. No idea.
Should there be a band that kind of takes the mantle and continues the important messages that they put forth? I think there always has to be somebody. Like before Rage, you know, there was somebody before Rage, and I think after Rage, I personally feel like there's got to be somebody else that steps forward and keeps preaching this message. I feel like it's necessary. It's not something that you can force, though. It just kind of has to be a band or a person that just kind of organically winds up in that place. And Rage has been such a, man, they've been such a prominent force in that arena that maybe there has been other people that could step into that shoe. But who would want to, considering, you know, Rage being Rage, you know, but now Rage isn't Rage anymore. And so maybe there is another band that could step into that. Like I said, though, I don't think that it should be forced. I do think it's necessary. And hopefully there'll be a band that just kind of winds up there organically and continues what they started.
Word up, dude.
Hey, man. Let's take a quick break. You wanna?
Yeah, let's take a quick break, man. I'm exhausted after that rant.
I know. I want to go make some toast. When we come back, we're going to talk about maybe one of the most interesting men in rock. One of the most interesting men in the history of rock, in my opinion. So stick around.
Looking for a good rock and roll book? Do you watch a ton of rock and roll documentaries like I do? Well, that's why I started the Rock Talk Studio podcast, to be the place to go for previews, reviews, and recommendations of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies. Every first Tuesday of the month, the Rock Talk Studio gets you caught up on all the latest and points out where to go for the good stuff. Give me 20 minutes and I'll get you caught up on the world of rock and roll books, docs, and movies from every possible angle and leave you with a no-doubt decision on where to spend your time and money. Fan or just casual fan, or maybe you're on the fence and just looking for something new to check out. Either way, I got you covered. Recently on the show, I've talked about books and documentaries from everyone and everything from David Bowie, Randy Rhoads, and the Allman Brothers, to the Abbey Road Studios, Cheap Trick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Richard, and more. Join me, Big Rick, every Tuesday of the month as I host a Rock Talk Studio podcast, the ultimate review of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies.
Our Mind on Music is a podcast that covers all things music. We cover all genres and we welcome all perspectives, from musicians, producers, and content creators to music enthusiasts. We have discussions, interviews, opinions, and much, much more. We hope you'll join us every week, Our Mind on Music, on YouTube and all streaming platforms.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955, on this day, the birth of rock and roll, gifted unto the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for hanging out with us. go grab somebody that's never heard us before and say, hey, you got to check these motherfuckers out because they're fucking spitting shit that you just might like. So, hey, Scott, we're going to, gosh, man, I feel like we're going to go to church tonight. You want to go to church with me tonight?
Hell yeah.
Let's go to church. Let's go to the Church of Rollins. We're going to do Henry Rollins, LA Money Train. This is, hold on, let me pull my thing up here. This is off of their 2000 album, Get Some Go Again, Henry Rollins Band. At the very end, this is a very stout 15-minute song, and we'll get into that later on. But yeah, dude, fucking Henry Rollins, man. LA Money Train. I want to know, did it kill rock? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Well, Rico, as you know, there's only one way to find out if Henry Rollins, of all people, and LA Money Train killed rock and roll. And that's to use our bulletproof, time-tested, over 100 episodes of doing this shit, proprietary formula. It's science. And as you know, you cannot deny it. We've got five categories that we use to determine whether or not Henry Rollins killed rock and roll. Rico, should children try this at home?
Yeah, you know, we just came off of Christmas, right? And you know how when you, it, like Christmas and Thanksgiving are the two big ones where you know, it's Christmas. And I know I do this, and I think there's a lot of people out there that do this too, where you, like, I go into like the day before Christmas and I say, you know what? I'm going to the fucking store and I'm going to get all my favorite baked goods and I'm going to eat like a motherfucker the whole next day. And it's going to be glorious, right? Well, when you get about, like, you start, like, as soon as I wake up, like, I'm housing two giant pieces of cheesecake, like, as soon as I wake up. And so it's fucking on, right? By the time I get to like mid-afternoon, what you and I call permabloat, like, I already have had permabloat for a few hours by the time I hit like mid-afternoon. I'm a fucking mess, dude. I keep eating anyways because fuck it, it's Christmas, right? And I'm knee deep in it. I'm way down the rabbit hole to stop now. So by the time the sun goes down, I'm fucking laying on the floor like a beached whale, like hating myself and like really questioning my life decisions. So I guess what I'm trying to say is if you try to do what we do, you're going to wind up laying on the floor in your living room like a bloated beached whale, questioning your life choices. So just let us do all the dirty work, man.
Agreed. And what does that dirty work of autopsying rock and roll songs consist of? I don't even know if that's a word. Five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, the artist is Rollins Band. The song, L.A. Money Train. The category, gratuitous boomerism. How do you score?
Do you remember way back in the Stone Ages, Scott, when CDs were purchased in stores and that was the main form of media that people experienced music on? Do you remember way back during those days?
I sure do, yeah.
Okay, so there was this thing back then called the hidden track. How many people under the age of 75 you think know what a hidden track is? So for any of you people out there that are under the age of 75, I'm going to tell you what a hidden track is. So at the very end, what you think, you get duped now. You get into thinking that the last song on the CD is actually the last song, when it's really not. You see, there's like this big long thing of silence and you think that's the end and you want to turn it off because you think that's it. Oh no, Scott, that's not the end, because way after that long, it's actually one huge track, right? At the end of that long, huge track is another song way at the end that they call a hidden track. It was a thing for a while. Everybody did it. I don't know who started doing it, but everybody did it. I thought it was cool as fuck. Everybody did it because it was cool as hell. You're like, ooh, what's the hidden track going to be? dude, nobody even knows what that shit is now. So that alone gets this song a 0.5 for boomerism. The other, I'm going to bump it up to a full, well, you can give him the obligatory 0.5 for being born in 1961 if you want to. I'll leave that up to you, though. I'm going to give him another 0.5 for being yet another boomer who bitches about LA. So, unfortunately, I have to give it a 1.0 for boomerism.
You know, Rico, the hidden track may be a thing of the past, but I think we discovered how to hide podcasts on Spotify, because I've seen our analytics and no one can find our podcast.
Our entire account is one giant hidden track. Oh my God. Funny.
All right. Gratuitous boomerism. Henry Rollins, born in 1961. So I'm going to go ahead and hit him with a 0.5 for that. Should I bump it up to a full point? Now, I see your point. This could be, the entire track could be viewed as one long get off my lawn spit take. It really could, like from top to bottom.
Get off my lawn.
But my only problem with that is the man not allowed to have a perspective and an opinion? And it also might kind of be right, at least for the time. I mean, this song came out, you know, 24 years ago now. But so do we penalize someone for expressing an opinion because they're a boomer? Yeah, we'll go ahead and give them a full one. All right, full one. I got to use science. I got to look at it in today's perspective, right?
We don't have five categories of opinion, Scott. We have five categories of hardcore science here. There's no room for opinions here.
All right, let's move on. Category two, excessive misogyny. And Rico, if you need them, and let me tell you, I have the lyrics available, but it's bizarre because you would think the lyrics to the song would be easy to find online. They are, but they're usually riddled with typos. Many of the lyrics are wrong, okay? And many instances, they print it as print it. They put it on the web as just one giant paragraph. And so it's very, very hard to read. They don't break it up into like verses at all. It's just one giant paragraph with no returns. And it's like impossible to read. So I'm battling incorrect lyrics. I'm battling typos. And I'm battling the fact that people just didn't hit a fucking break, hit a return, and break this thing up from one giant verbal chunk. But I digress. If you want to hear the lyrics, I've got them available.
Yeah, I do, which is why we do this and nobody else does, because you power through really confusing websites that barely have any legible lyrics. And not everybody can do that, Scott. By the way, insert spoken word sponsored live read here. Back to you, Scott.
All right, everybody, we're here in Los Angeles in the wonderful Cherokee Recording Studios, and tonight we're going to vent some steam and talk about this town. And hanging out and jamming with us tonight is one of the great guitar gods of our time, none other than the brother Wayne Kramer. So, Jason, are you ready? All right, one, two, three, hit it. Yeah, I want to talk about the LA money train, Hollywood, California, the place where people come to make it. The train makes many stops on its route, and many try valiantly to get on. Like the rock star from Portland, who works at the office supply store for years, getting his hair together, waiting for that train to stop and take him to fame and financial success. And then there's the actress from Houston who spent 6 years preparing for her big screen debut by dancing naked on a stage and ends up realizing her celluloid dreams by going straight to video, co-starring in 10 Miles of Tough Tongue. Hey, it's work. You gotta keep working. You gotta keep working it. Some people will do anything to get on. Sounds pretty wild, right? All aboard, y'all. All right, Rico, do you need me to read more?
Man, I would love you to, but dude, let me just say, okay, first there's marginal misogyny here, because more than once in the lyrics he refers to females only in reference to doing porn or strip or being strippers. So you could maybe toss him a half point for that. I'm not gonna, because it's fucking true, dude. So you can't penalize somebody for spitting the truth, right? So I personally, for misogyny, he's gonna get a zero from me. But lyrically, dude, let me just tell you something. This song is a required multiple listen. You can't just do one round with this song. It is like, to quote fucking the dude from Christmas Vacation, dude, this song is the gift that keeps on giving, man. It really is. Like, every time you listen to it, you catch something different. It gets better and better every time. I love it. But anyway, it gets a zero for me personally for misogyny. He's spitting the truth. Can't penalize him for that.
Yeah, I think you're right. The only time women are referred to in the track is someone who's gone to Hollywood, went to become a musician or an actress, but somehow got derailed and ended up in B movies or porn and or dancing, stripping. And so it's this idea that you go out there for one thing and then reality hits you and you end up demeaning yourself to get by. And then there's the line about musicians who the real musicians and real artists who can't make it and are left, and I quote, standing on the side and getting run over by those with pert breasts, dyed hair, and wonderful cheekbones, right? So the female form in this song is one that's only of exploitation, right?
Right.
So I think you could argue that there's something there, but I'm not going to score it because I'm going to give it a zero. Because I don't think that there's any, oh gosh, how to put it? I guess I don't think that there's any ill intent here. I think it's just saying that you go out there with good intentions, but the town will chew you up and you could end up doing this instead.
Yeah, and my whole shtick earlier about getting a point for bitching about LA, and see, I'm balancing it out by saying, since we discussed lyrics in this category, that at the end of the song, he makes everything that he's saying okay, because at the end he includes himself and he says, I'm just like you guys. I want to get on the money train too, and I want to take all those fake ass motherfuckers for every dime they got, right? Or however the lyric goes. So it balances out. So it's not a just a strip, because he would be hypocritical, right? Because he lived in LA for 40 years and he benefited from all the shit that he's complaining about. But then he includes himself in it at the end, which is so Henry Rollins to be accountable, actually, which is awesome. That's why I love this dude. Read the line, dude. This is hilarious. Read the line if you can get to it quickly, where he talks about the saxophone player. Fucking love this.
Oh, you hear that saxophone player in the background? Yeah, we brought him in so you could get a glimpse of my newfound maturity and still get a sense of my street credibility. He's a session guy.
He's a session guy.
We don't even know, he doesn't even know
Didn't
my
even know my
name.
name.
He's no
Love it, man.
fool. He's getting that session work. He's riding that train. Good work if you can get it. Just like a stunt man, just like a porn star. Oh, wait a minute. He's an actor. Hey man, what was your
What was your
motivation for that
motivation
last
for that
scene?
scene? Love that, dude. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, before we move on to the kind of like the excessive misogyny slash lyrical analysis here, one thing that I think has to be said is that Henry Rollins has a reputation for being kind of like a muscle bound, angry guy. And he's actually really, really thoughtful. And he's also a poet. And in this song is where his, and he's also a spoken word. Or he's got many trades. The guy's a Swiss Army knife, but he also does spoken word. And this song is like the perfect kind of blend of his thoughtfulness, his spoken word, and his ability to write poetry. And he delivers it like Do you remember Brady's Cafe in Kent?
Yes.
Did you ever go out there like on poetry night when people would, when the like hippies and beatniks in Kent would like,
they do poetry slams and shit out there? Yeah. Never. I knew about it, but I never actually went.
I would go out there and watch these cats. And there's like, when you watch people deliver poetry, you know, in a live setting like that, there's a rhythm to it. It's like rapping, you know, but without kind of like a beat. And there's a rhythm to it. There's nuance. It's done thoughtfully, and lines are delivered. Certain lines are delivered specifically to enunciate and make points, drive home ideas, you know, and they can be really, it's like a performance, and they can be really, really moving, you know, when they're done well. Or conversely, if someone who tries it, who shouldn't be doing it, they can be like, you can flame out hard. Henry is really, really good at this, you know, and this song is him, in my opinion, delivering a long spoken word poetry rant.
True. He is listen, man, and maybe this is too early in the autopsy, but I'm just going to go for it. When I listened to like for Henry Rott, like this song, this entire album is phenomenal, by the way. I get pissed off because I listen to, like, I remember first experiencing him back when the Liar video came out on MTV. That was my first real taste of Henry Rollins. And I'm like, this dude is, even back then, I'm like, his lyrics, like the way he is just delivering these lyrics, he's such a fucking wordsmith, man. And he's like, when you read on him, like he's on stage, when he's in Black Flag, he's on stage in like these fucking black shorts and no shirt and no shoes, barefoot, all fucking jacked from being in the gym, just beating the shit out of people, right? Getting fights. And he's super intense and super angry, but the messages that he delivers are so thoughtful and so well thought out. And the way he advocates for people over the years, and he is just, like I said, man, he is a super fucking interesting person. And I get pissed at myself when I listen to this song and this in the whole album. I get mad at myself for not listening to more of him, because there's nothing not interesting about this guy.
Let's move on. Category 3, Wanton Whiteness, the track LA Money Train. Rico, how do you score?
Yeah, see, this is where, sorry, I had to take a drink. This is where I got to give him a 1 on this one, because he's a I hate to do it. I don't want to do it, dude. Because he is a super white ass motherfucker, and I feel like he's going the funk route, and he's like spitting out names of like black artists at the end, and I think he's just appropriating the whole thing, like how very white of you to do that in order to, and he's a really smart dude, but I gotta a science, man, I gotta do a 1 on this one, unfortunately, because I just think that he, you know, the music choice is one thing, but then I don't know, you understand where I'm coming, I'm not getting my point across very well on this, but I think he's just appropriating a little too much culture for this song.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad you pointed out the artist's rant when he gets to the end of the song, and he's talking about all the fake superficial art that's in Hollywood. Then he laments the loss that it's never coming around again, the real artist. And he name checks Coltrane, Duke, Monk, Jimmy, Otis, Aretha, Sly, you know, Mahalia Jackson, Mississippi, Fred McDowell, Lightning Lemon, Curtis Marvin, and the Reverend Al Green. He references, and you know, and it, you don't have to be like a musical savant to put together like Curtis Mayfield, Johnny Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, right? Jimi Hendrix. Yeah. And to your point, Aretha Franklin, they're all African American artists, you know. What I know about Henry Rollins is that he's an audiophile, and he is a hardcore like music junkie. He's a true musicologist, and the guy's record collection is bigger than his home. And so I don't question his authenticity when he sang and name checking and his, when he's putting out there his love for these artists. I don't question that, but it's also like, though, are you saying that just because it's easy in a way? Because I also know for a fact that he's like a big Black Sabbath fan, but Ozzy's not name checked in this list, right? So by name checking a long string of African American artists, are you artificially infusing your take with a little bit of credibility, right? Whereas if it was me and I name checked, oh man, where's the Ozzy and where's the Jello Biafra and Bon Scott today? It's not going to have the same resonance, right? Automatically, it sounds, it makes you laugh. You know, if I'm like, oh man, where's today's Jackie Lawless? You know, there's, you know, it's, or Jackie. Why do I keep doing that? Blackie Lawless.
Blackie.
You see what I'm saying? So in a sense, I think you made a really good point about there's some appropriation of their cultural legacy to kind of make a point, to put a fine point on, and I think it's deliberate to put a fine point on the the point he's trying to make in the lyrics.
I don't think, again, I agree with you 100%. I don't think there was any ill will intended there. I don't think there was anything negative intended at all. I think he really listens to that stuff. I think he really likes it. You know, Wayne Kramer was sitting right next to him. He didn't mention the MC5 at all and could have easily, right?
Right.
He's sitting right next to him. So, yeah, anyway, I just thank you for making my point for me on that.
Yeah, and his entire, Henry Rollins' entire back tattoo is, you know, an homage to the Stooges, right? And Iggy Pop. And so it's like, you know, he doesn't have a giant back tattoo of Marvin Gaye. You know what I mean? It's like,
that would be awkward, wouldn't it?
So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and score it a one as well. Let's move on to Malignant Machismo. It's going to be a tough one here. I'm curious to hear what you have to say. The song is L.A. Money Train. The artist is the Rollins Band.
So Malignant Machismo, there is like, okay, this dude, seriously, like, there's no question he oozes machismo, right? But now we have to ask ourselves, is it malignant or not? I say fuck no, dude. Even back in Black Flag when he was getting in fights with people in the audience, that is so fucking punk rock, dude, and I love every minute of it. I love every ounce of fucking beefy machismo that this dude oozes out. He's getting the flat out zero for me, dude. His machismo is, there's nothing malignant about it. I love every minute of it. I wish he would walk around in fucking just black shorts all the time. I know he doesn't do that anymore because he's like 60 now, but dude, if he just walked around barefoot in black shorts like forever, I think that would be bitching as fuck. So,
you know,
that's a zero for me.
It's a zero for me as well. I don't see it in the song. Not in a negative way, which is what we're looking
for.
He makes a cool old guy. He very much has that embracing of aging. You know, he's not dying his hair. He quit music for the same reason another old rocker, we talk about D. Snyder a few episodes back, the exact same reason. You know, I'm not going to do this.
Yep.
You know, when I'm too old to do it, you know, he walked away very intentionally from it. And he's got other irons in the fire and other things that interest him. But I do respect the fact that he's a guy who's just accepts aging. And even though he was someone who spent, and I know he's still a gym rat, but he was someone who put such a premium on having everything together physically when time is undefeated, and no matter how many hours you put in the gym or how close you watch your diet, time will beat that back if you live long enough. And he doesn't allow that to derail him, if that makes sense. You understand what I'm getting at? He's still staying true to what he believes, but he's accepting of the fact that Father Time is legitimately knocking on the door and is, you know, it's showing, and he's an older man now.
Yeah. I totally get it. I agree 100%.
All right, let's move on. Our final category, culture vulturism, LA Money Train.
Um, I think on the album, I only listened to the album once. I'm going to go back to it. The album's great, by the way. It's not just good. It's great. And I think there is another song where and you can maybe help me out with this. I think there's one other song where there's a little bit of funk going on. I think most of it is just straight up rock, though. Is that true? I think there's another one, right?
Yeah, I can't recall which track it is, but I'm not trying to step on your turn here, but
No, you're good.
I think it's important with the Rollins Band to outline its evolution a little bit. Yeah. You know, Henry obviously leaves Black Flag, but the original iteration of Rollins Band, and you mentioned Liar, that was a different band than you hear on this record. The name changed, but the band stayed the same. The original lineup of the band was, one thing I loved about the Rollins Band was that he's coming from a punk background, but when he goes and does his own band, it's a total artsy noise rock jazz fusion thing. And he had a legitimate jazz bass player in the band. Yep. And the guitarist was Chris Haskett. And the guy was legitimately kind of like the perfect 90s guitar player. He was noisy. He was definitely kind of like had some Jane's Addiction kind of feel, a little bit of that Dave Navarro thing, but he could also be funky, but there was also a lot of jazz in there. And then the bass player, Gibbs, who was the bass player in the band, legitimately came from a jazz background. Yep. So he had put together kind of this art rock band, which I thought was just really cool, because you would expect him to keep doing a Black Flag kind of thing. And he goes the total opposite direction. So they were super experimental, jazzy and noisy. And he did a few records with that band, and then he replaced them. The band you hear on this record is actually a Los Angeles power trio called Mother Superior. And he basically hired Mother Superior to be like, hey, be my new backing band, because I think he wanted to do more of a straight up rock thing. And he also loves power trios. That's why he loved the Black Sabbath band, you know, the three piece band minus Ozzy. So mm-hmm. I think he wanted to do that for a couple records. And so that's why he replaced the art jazz band with Mother Superior. So what you're hearing on this record, to make a long story boring, is Mother Superior, and it's much more bluesy, much more straight ahead rock, and yes, there's some funk element in there as well.
Yeah, and thanks for that, by the way. I know you are much more versed in the Rollins history than I am, and again, like, I go back to what I said before, I get pissed at myself because I've always wanted to get into Rollins more, but just life has always gotten in the way. I haven't had a chance to, and I think I'm going to make myself now, because this album, I know I've read that his sound has changed over the years, and the term, like, for him, that going along with everything you just said, that comes to mind when it comes to him is like his stuff has like been avant-garde, right? That's kind of a poetic expression, and I think it applies to him. And, you know, when I hear his stuff, you know, if anybody else was doing his stuff, it wouldn't sound poetic and artsy and avant-garde like it does when he does it. And so the fact that LA Money Train is like got the super fucking late 70s funk thing going on, I think it's totally okay. I don't have one fucking problem with it. I think he pulls it off great. What I do to get like audio-ish here for a second, if you have earbuds in or headphones, I think what's pretty fucking cool is the way they engineered the guitars, where you've got like Wayne Kramer going on in your right ear, and you've got Jim Wilson, the other guitar player, going on in your left ear, and they're doing two totally different things during this song, like the entire song. And I think the way they mix that down that way, it's so fucking cool, man. And then they've got the bass and the drums coming in both ears, and Rollins in both ears. So I think it's pretty damn cool. I like how they got Wayne Kramer from MC5 in there. Culture Vulturism is a zero for me. I think that he does a great job with the song. The funk sounds really super funky and awesome, and his spoken word just goes perfect over it. And funny thing, I always get this feeling when I listen to him for some reason, like if you took like fucking Glenn Danzig and like less singing and more talking, it would like he would sound like Henry Rollins a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think no, there it's a zero for me for sure.
Yeah, it's a zero for me too. I mean, the only place you're going to try to really kind of pin it is maybe just on the music itself, which is really just a bed that they're providing for him to kind of rap over. The bassist in the jazz bassist in the original lineup, I had forgotten his name. We were talking about him. I pulled it up on Wiki. His name is Melvin Gibbs. And it's interesting because Wikipedia says, and we're going to be seeing Living Color in concert in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Wikipedia says that he came on the recommendation of Vernon Reid from Living Color because he was Melvin Gibbs was a friend of his and recommended him for the Rollins band. And so Henry hired him on Vernon Reid's recommendation. And it's something I'd never really thought of. But if you listen to some Living Color albums, like the Stained album specifically, really sounds like sonically sounds a lot like a Rollins band from that era, the 90s Lollapalooza era of the band.
Yep.
Very similar kind of cross-pollination there. All right, Rico, let's add this thing up, man.
Did you give a zero? What was your score?
I gave it a zero, man.
Okay.
Yep. Let's add it up. Our Rock and Roll Autopsy on LA Money Train by Rollins Band. I've got 2 points, Rico. 2 points.
And let's see. I've got 117 divided by 2. I've got also have 2 points, 2.0 for me.
For a grand total of
4 points, right where it ought to be. This song is super good. It almost contributed to rock. It's great. This song is great. I love that it's super long. Every time I listen to today alone, I probably listened to it a half a dozen times. And every time I listened to it, I liked it more than I liked it the previous time I listened to it. And the lyrics are so fucking cleverly written. He is such a wordsmith. I love the way he delivers a message. It's clever and funny and interesting and not derogatory. Like, and he's not being an asshole, which I completely respect. I've heard him talk before. This isn't the first time. And I keep saying it. I think this dude is super fucking interesting and might be one of the most interesting people in rock. So, that's my take on this.
All right, man. Well, I ranted a lot this episode. Thanks for putting up with it.
Enjoyed every minute of it.
All right. I'm going to go make myself the world's worst bagel.
And you're going to toast both sides and probably chip a tooth as you try to ingest it. Because you have a toaster from 1955.
Oh, my gosh. It all needs replaced, Rico.
So do you go straight cream cheese or do you have flavored cream cheese or do you butter or what? Peanut butter? What's your topping of choice?
I'll be honest with you. I don't eat them. My kids eat them all the time. And my wife usually keeps a variety of topping possibilities on hand. So I honestly rarely, if ever, make a bagel.
You should go make one, dude.
To me, it's like, let's wake up in the morning and eat like something gigantic and heavy. Like, why would I want to do that?
Dude, bagels are heavy duty, man. It's like eating a fucking brick, man. It's so substantial.
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's like, okay, I just woke up and now I'm ready for a nap because I ate a bagel.
I know. It's so true, man. I mean, the once in a blue moon that I have them, like I enjoy them, but dude, I can't do those regularly, man. They're gut busters for sure.
They're gut busters. All right, gang. This has been Rock and Roll Autopsy. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Who is it? Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
Guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, loving till the morning. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit battleofthebandspod.com.